Welcome to Just a Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is food packaging expert Gary Kestenbaum. Gary Kestenbaum is a private consultant focusing on package development, performance, safety, and compliance, providing technical, litigation, specification, and related document development and review support to the food industry. He specializes in skilled, independent analysis of client documentation, process, materials, and safety performance, and provides analysis and recommendations to litigation professionals and corporate clients with focus on best practices, food safety, and packaging regulatory compliance. Prior to heading off onto his own, he was senior food packaging safety consultant for EHA Consulting Group. He also held various positions with Kraft Foods, including senior packaging engineer, snacks division, and packaging materials engineer. Gary, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
So, Gary, you have a vast expertise in packaging, and we're going to touch on a lot of those today. We'll talk a little bit about commercialization, safety, and the overall process. The actual development packaging, I think, is fascinating, and I would probably suggest that we're in a little bit of a packaging heyday right now. Given that, you know, just all, any design can be on the table for consideration. When you walk up and down the aisles, you certainly see all shapes and sizes and materials and everything. So this should be an interesting conversation. To give our listeners an idea of what you're doing these days, let's start with this. You have clients in the in food and package, food and beverage industry. Maybe walk us through almost a day with one of those clients, or some specifics on how you're helping people today.
Sure. Well, a good example of a current client are a group of fellows who have developed a concept. They're entrepreneurs, if you will. They've got a startup organization, and they had to reach out to find their individual professionals. Certainly they knew that they could have gone on the web and put in keywords to source formulations, raw materials, foodstuffs, packaging materials, etc. But I think they thought that it would be more effective to exploit the knowledge of professionals that they could reach out to. So they got to me and they asked me if I could provide them with a package that would be cost effective and suitable for their application. And at that point we were off and running, and they're, from my understanding, they are pleased to be able to have somebody with my skills and concerns to help them seek out a package that is functional and naturally protects their product.
Great. So I'm gonna challenge you to provide for me kind of a, I don't know, maybe it's seven steps or 10 steps, but let's call it the for dummies, because I'm walking into this with a level of ignorance here, of how a package is developed, right? So you start with, I'll attempt to kick you off here. You start with the food itself, right? There's going to be some requirements on it. If it's almonds, it can fit in a certain package. If it's liquid, it needs a certain packaging. But then where do you go from there? How do you determine, you know, what are the steps? I mean, I'm going to turn it over to you. Give me the for dummies.
You bring up an excellent point, because you would think that that's where the process starts, but the process starts with listening to your customer. In the case of a large corporation, your customer is the marketing manager. So all of these companies, such as Kraft or other such consumer product companies, are marketing companies first. The objective is to listen to what your client or customer wants, and then think to yourself, okay, what's already out there that we can fast adapt, because nobody wants to take 2 years to get to market. And if your customer says, I want something that's completely unique, that represents a point of differentiation from anything or anyone else, then of course the degree of difficulty and the challenge gets ratcheted up. But typically that's not the case. Typically they're going to say, we have a new product. The product involves thus and such. We'll be marketing that to, et cetera, whomever. And You'll write down all the bullet points that they're looking for, and then noodle through what options you think best meet that criteria without having to do extensive testing that would qualify the package. And sometimes you have to, but again, everybody wants to get it on the shelf sooner than later. So the first step would be to listen to what they have to say, then naturally bring them concepts, whether it be oral or they love to see prototypes, as you can imagine. The third thing that probably jumps to the top of the list ends up being cost, because they love all the ideas until they find what they have to pay for it. And then all of a sudden they get cold when they realize it doesn't fit the business proposition. So cost matters. Supplier matters. Whether the package developer knows the supplier and knows that the supplier is able to bring in a quality product on time that meets all of the food safety and quality criteria. And then ultimately, you've got your levels of prototyping, testing, well before you get to commercialization. So that there are a lot of steps on the way. And naturally, in a marketing environment, if you tell the marketing manager what the risks are, the marketing manager has the authority to say, I want to shortcut or skips or parallel path certain steps, and I'm willing to take that risk. In other cases where there isn't a marketing situation, then not so much. Then all of the due diligence is performed.
You mentioned risks that you'll bring to a marketing manager. What did you mean by that?
Well, there are all sorts of risks associated with putting a product in a package that has never been done before. When I say never been done before, you might have a package of breakfast crunchies or whatever may be, the base product of which has been on the market forever, but you are going to flavor it differently or do something different from what you've ever done before, hence the creation of a quote-unquote new product, whether it's a subline, a line extension, or whatever. The minute that you change anything from what is already known, all of a sudden there is risk. And the risk is that there might be flavor scalping of the product by the packaging. There might be product package interaction. The shelf life might be compromised from what you think it would normally be. Any of these things could happen. And as a result, there has to be product package interaction testing. In addition, if there is some change in the product itself, you may find that the package, wherein the package heretofore protected the product from migration of moisture, crushing, oxygen, whatever is required, maybe that doesn't work so well for this new product. So you've got to assess, you've got to tick off on a checklist all of the different challenges that one might have between that product and that package, and make sure that you've tested for all of them. If there is no time to do that, if it turns out that you'd need a year to do all that testing and they don't have a year to get it to market, then they begin to talk through which ones could we conclude will be the same, which ones don't we have to do, which ones do we test while getting it ready for market, launch it, and then if we have to pull it, we pull it. So those are all challenges. Naturally, none of those involve safety. The marketing manager nor anybody else would ever recommend compromising food safety. So we are certainly not talking about that as a risk that gets shortcut.
So taste obviously matters. We certainly at Chef's Best think it does. So I'm kind of fascinated by, I think you called it taste scalping, which I think probably refers to loss of taste. And you also referred to the kind of the interaction of a package on taste, which, you know, extreme example I think of is, you know, your food starts tasting like plastic or something like that. First of all, I can only imagine the stories that you must have from doing years of this, but we could probably take hours over a beer sharing some of the more interesting ones. But more specifically, how do you What is that process like to ensure that taste is stabilized and maintained? I mean, do you take the product, literally put it in the package that you intend to go to retail with, and let it sit in your closet for 6 months? I mean, is that done? And then you taste it again and see if that plastic is in there. How's that done?
There are all sorts of protocols that can be used to evaluate product package interaction. And the term we were talking about before, flavor scalping, is the term that's typically used to describe when the package contact surface, let's for argument's sake say polyethylene or mixed polyethylenes, as the polymer that's actually going to contact the food in a average package. If for some reason there are volatiles in the food that are uptaken or absorbed, if you will, by or through the polyethylene, then naturally those volatiles will not be retained in the cavity of the package holding the food. So it's one thing to say that the contact surface and the rest of the package creates a neutral environment where nothing goes into the food and nothing comes out. It's another one to be aware that over time, flavor components, volatiles, if you will, sensitive flavor ingredients begin to migrate into or out of the package. A good example of that, and I'm not going to use brands, but a familiar kids ready-to-drink product in a polyethylene or polypropylene bottle is intentionally over-flavored to begin with, recognizing that its flavor impact will decrease over a period of time. And if that gradient, if the degree of flavor degradation or reduction exceeds what marketing and tech expects, then obviously something has to change. Either you've got to change the package material or you've got to change the product formulation. So that is a good example of either flavor reduction or flavor scalping as a mechanism for qualifying or disqualifying a package material.
Wow. Interesting stuff.
Conversely, you were mentioning before, the other risk during product package interaction is the point you made that the packaging material is not neutral. You want it to be neutral naturally. You do not want a chemical flavor, a plastic flavor. You don't want anything that is not characteristic to the product sensory profile itself. But in some cases, the chemistry of the two may suggest a metallic flavor being picked up or a chemical flavor, an off flavor, something. It's very difficult to characterize these because when you go to a consumer and you say, taste this, what do you taste? And they say, it has a nasty odor or taste, a chemical. They're not going to use technical terms, but right off the bat, you have a sense that something is wrong. And if you want to spend the money, you can identify what's going on via high-tech analytical processes to determine what component is migrating.
Mm. Wow.
And of course, you don't want that. Naturally, no one wants that. And in some cases, the FDA, the 21 CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations, considers that behavior to be violative. And nobody wants to get involved in a violative situation. So you try and stay away from that. A good example of when that happens is baked goods. Baked goods with their fats, oils, and subtle flavors are sensitive to picking up odor components from quote-unquote the wrong packaging. Naturally, every bakery knows what the right packaging is, and rarely will they go off on a different tangent and take a food contact material that they're not familiar with. They'll use the same old from their list, if you know what I mean, based on what the product
is. Yeah. That is interesting. If you think of any, really any baked goods, whether fresh or, you know, something meant to be more shelf stable, it it's almost always the same type of kind of clear plastic wrap. You don't really see, some of the variety that you see with others. That's pretty interesting.
I'll give you a good example.
I'm imagining my next trip to the supermarket is going to be a little bit different the way I look at things.
I was working on developing the packaging for a bar, a dessert bar. And the dessert bars were something that you might see on the shelf right now, but nothing exotic, but they were very tasty. And there was a lemon and a chocolate, whatever it may be. And the question was asked of me, could I come up with a packaging wrap material that would wrap at high speed? And two different options were heat seal film, a wrapper that was sealed with heat by bonding the contact layer to another part of the contact layer, the way you may see frequently out in the field. But more so, they wanted to know if I could go with what they call cold seal, which is a cohesive material that involves no heat. And naturally, if you can eliminate the heat component in sealing a package, you can seal it potentially at a faster rate. The equipment is a little bit different, and can't a good example of cold seal might be candy bars and nutritional bars are sealed with cohesive, no heat. So they wanted to know how that would work out, and I chose a couple of structures that I thought would work, and they failed miserably in terms of imparting a flavor into the bars. So we excluded cold seal very quickly from those particular formulations. They just weren't going to work.
It's interesting stuff. I want to talk a little bit about safety, which is, I think, two things. One, it's probably a book in itself. And I would also imagine that it's, on the scale of importance, it's, number one, two, and three. That's the most important thing. Yet it's something that consumers like myself, I could tell you, take entirely for granted. We've been discussing this, I'm thinking about the literally hundreds of packages that I open per week, whether it's or providing my children granola bars or opening up, the week's gallon of milk. We take it for granted. And as far as I can tell, negative effects from safety have been minimal on me and people I know and so on. I suppose there's a couple reasons for that. One, I think we probably have to tip our cap a little bit to the government in terms of regulations and being stringent on it, and the companies for adhering to those and taking safety important. But what are kind of, to try and break this down into a bite-sized piece here, what have kind of the three things that you think of when related to safety that are most important? Is it, safety to make sure that, it's airtight and bacteria can't get in there? Is it safety so that to make sure that, children don't choke on it? How do we break safety down into kind of the three most important takeaways that anyone in the CPG industry should be absolutely thinking about on a daily basis? Because as far as I could tell, everything that's related to packaging, if you make a mistake, it is going to cost you in numerous, numerous, numerous ways, litigious ways, but also just, you can miss an entire year of selling product because you have to recall and everything. So what are the three things related to safety that just, I guess, keep you up at night might be another way of putting it.
Well, you started off that question by bringing up a great concept. And if I can continue with what you were saying,
of course,
what the consumer, a consumer end user considers to be quote unquote food safety may very well be different from what science or people inside the industry consider to be food safety. When you talk about true food safety, you are talking about a material, potential material or situation or environment or condition which would cause harm to a consumer, physical harm or be violative in that we can't prove that it will cause harm. It's just not allowed. It is either a violative condition or a violative product. It is not approved. And it doesn't mean that if you eat it, it's going to harm you, but nonetheless, it is disallowed. So we're talking about two possible conditions wherein consumers consider a safety issue something that is just not, something delivered that's not expected, an unexpected contamination, unlabeled allergen. Again, it may or may not hurt you or it may kill you. So I would say that if you're talking about the three things that everybody should be aware of and be concerned with when it comes to true food safety, not suitability, but safety, we're talking the three precepts of hazard analysis or HACCP or HARP-C from the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is chemical, physical, and microbiological contaminants. Included in that would be allergens, unlabeled allergens, and cross-contamination. Those are critical. And of course, all of that is invisible to the consumer. To your point, the consumer just has an expectation that his or her food is going to be free of chemicals that don't belong there or are not approved, free of microbiological contamination, the expectation that it is either it has been tested, it has been cleaned, if it's produce, it has been washed, and there's somebody out there protecting me, so to speak, and that it is free from any physical contamination that shouldn't be there. And as we talked, it should be free of cross-contamination of items, things, and substances which are not expected to be there. But of course, as you know, when you talk about produce as an example, it's a natural product. And who's to say that there has not been some limited contact with a cross-contaminant? As you know, it happens all the time, whether we're talking about E. coli or some other microbe, pathogenic organism that ends up contaminating produce or fruit. So it does happen, and we all have to be aware of it. As you know, there are typically best practices for buying and using fruit and vegetables, whether it be washing or other. So I would say the three things that you think about broadly in terms of category is chemical, physical, and microbiological contamination.
Yeah. Gary, I just want you to create a packaging for strawberries so that they don't get the mold on it.
Well,
nothing annoys me more.
Remember that mold would be included depending upon what type of mold. Foods, we're really talking about food spoilage organism, which will not harm or kill you. However, a great concept to discuss is whether something that the consumer finds disgusting or objectionable constitutes true food safety. That is a concept that has not been agreed upon universally by everybody in the food chain. So if I put something out there that the wherein the consumer opens up the package and goes, oh, kind of odor is that in the headspace? I don't like that. But it's not going to harm him. It's not toxic. Is that food safety or not? What if the person who opens that package is if she's pregnant, and because of her pregnancy, she is very sensitive to odors that are disgusting, and she gets sick? Is that food safety? So these are challenges that companies have to face all the time as to what to do if and when that occurs.
Wow. Well, it's certainly complicated stuff. I think the industry is probably happy to have folks like you around with so much experience, knowledge, and I appreciate how you're able to kind of, see these challenges from all the different angles and considerations. And it's certainly not just a straightforward binary kind of linear process. There's, you do this, it affects that. You do that, affects that. And all the way along, you needed to kind of weigh the risks, because I think you might agree that there's no such thing as a 100% perfect package out there.
That is true. I will give you a piece of information that I found very interesting. Again, people in the industry might find this in the category of I didn't know that. The packaging materials each have a typical odor and flavor. If you, again, nobody eats packaging, but the sensory profile can pretty much be captured on any given packaging material. And one major consumer food company has gone so far as to have their laboratories imitate, come up with liquid flavors created by a flavor house, which imitate or replicate a range of odors and flavors from certain categories of packaging that would be considered typical and atypical. And they create a kit, if you will, of those flavors in a little jar and send them out to their manufacturing facilities so that the quality managers can become familiar with the kit and then train the people out in the field who intake packaging as to what a cardboard box should smell like or what a typical carton, empty carton, paper carton should smell like or what typical plastic material, whichever plastic it is that they're using, should smell like. And then they have an example within that kit. If it smells like this, you should bring up, you should mention something to your supervisor because it shouldn't be smelling like that. And that is a level of training, which of course not a lot of companies do, but it's pretty interesting because at some point, packaging sensory issues, as we talked about earlier, can turn into recall challenges. So just something I didn't know and I ran across and I think represents very responsible conduct by that corporation.
Well, there's always more to learn. One area that folks can do that is that you are a regular contributor for Packaging Digest. So I'd encourage people to seek you out there, where you go into a little bit more depth about all these and FSMA and food fraud and everything else. So encourage people there. But how can anyone that wants to get a hold of you or reach you, why don't you let them know how they can do that?
Sure. I'm available through email at gary.kestenbaum@gmail.com. And as you point out, my contact information is at the end of all of my recent articles in Packaging Digest. And I would say that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining, Gary. You certainly taught me a lot.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And, I guess we appreciate that there's folks like you out there that are not only helping commercialize products and help brands be successful, but bring so much knowledge to, just ensure that consumers are, resulting in products that are high quality, meaning maintaining taste, but also safe as well. So I thank you from both sides of that aisle. And best of luck as you continue to support these brands. And we'll keep an eye on your articles on Packaging Digest as well.
Sure. I hope that information becomes value added to you and to your listeners.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best Production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.